Welcome to Dakota Midday for this Tuesday, the first day of December. I'm Kara Hetland, and we're going to spend some time today talking with Dakota political junkies. Jonathan Ellis, reporter columnist with the Sioux Falls Argus Leader, joins us today, and John Hunter, publisher of the Madison Daily Leader. Jonathan and John, thanks so much for being with us today.
Happy to be here.
Thanks, Kara.
So let's start. The climate conference is happening right now in France. I'm wondering if you're seeing anything of interest that's coming about this and what you may expect our congressional delegation to do or not do. Jonathan, we'll start with you.
Yeah, sure. I think that the president has gone with the expectation of an agreement that would place some fairly significant caps on, I think, existing emissions from power plants, existing and new power plants. And you've had the Congress, I believe the Senate's already passed resolutions saying that they're not going to agree with them. I think the House is scheduled to take those up if they haven't already. The President's already threatened to veto them. So that's what's going on nationally. I mean, for us, it's kind of interesting. In our congressional delegation, I would fully expect them to not be on board with, you know, these types of caps, arguing that that would make energy more expensive for South Dakota consumers. On the other hand, I mean, if you look at where we get our energy, here, how, you know, the energy that we provide here, you know, we already, numbers I'm looking at, we already have about renewable energies already account for about 65% of the state's total electricity generation. At least that was in 2013. So we already produce a pretty high amount of renewable energies, and in terms of carbon dioxide emissions, we rank 45th in the country, so we're pretty low in that. So I don't know if there were to be some kind of plan and these caps were put into place. I don't have the foresight to know what that would necessarily mean for the state. Certainly, it would promote more renewable energies, which, you know, is good for South Dakota in that sense. Arguably, energy might get a little more expensive, too.
John Hunter?
Yes, I think Jonathan's right on those things. South Dakota is in a little interesting situation. In fact, we have very good renewable things, as he was describing. The hydropower plants, of course, are the core of that, probably about 50 of those 65%, and the others comes from primarily wind. But the remaining of that is almost all coal plants, which is kind of the main target of President Obama's proposal and so mm-hmm. forth. So it would kind of dramatically affect what we do have. The mix of different fuel sources, whether it's coal or hydropower, there's all these factors all over. Remember a few years ago when we had a drought in South Dakota in the upper plains, and then they reduced the amount of hydropower that was available, and then you get too much and then you have to dump it over. I mean, there's all those things. Coal has been reliable, although it's, you know, most would argue that it's the biggest polluter. And again, South Dakota being in pretty good situation, but I don't think they would probably give us a pass and say, well, you know, you're 2/3 of yours comes from good sources. We're going to let you go ahead and do the other third. It would be a kind of a one-size-fits-all, I think, with all the eastern coal plants. So, I think that's the focus of if South Dakota wants to see an effect at this Paris deal, I think it's going to be coal plants is what we would look for.
Do you think, I heard some talk that a Republican president could undo all of this, and do you think anything really will come of what's happening in Paris and stick?
I'm not really sure. You know, President Obama has indicated he is confident that a deal will be reached, but there are so many moving parts here. You know, you have to have, I mean, there are 150 world leaders in this thing. We are, you know, in Asia, and China in particular, it tends to be the biggest polluter, and so we're trying to make promises, but then you have Congress behind that mm-hmm. is part of that too. So I don't see how anyone could agree. It just seems to be so hard, but we'll see how it plays out.
And we've seen calls from our congressional delegation, the governor joined in as well, calling on the president to suspend refugees from Iraq in Syria. John Hunter, we'll start with you about what's happening there and what is the current situation with refugees.
Well, the fear, of course, is that that by kind of blanket admission of Syrian refugees, that there would be some terrorists who would come to the United States and cause harm here. So I understand the question. Of course, the United States has been a haven for refugees since our founding, or before that. We were all refugees from Europe, but you know, or wherever early on, and many other places. So we have this, I think, national tradition of accepting people. But most of the people who are protesting this, of course, kind of primarily Republicans, it seems, are saying, you know, the screening has to be a lot more thorough than it normally would be, and the administration is kind of defending its scrutiny and saying it's doing a good enough screening to keep the terrorists out. But at the moment, I think they probably will have some sort of suspension of this until they can ramp up the scrutiny a little bit.
Jonathan Ellis, most of the refugees are in Sioux Falls.
Yeah, a good number of them are actually in Sioux Falls. I think Huron was like another place where you see a lot of them. But yeah, not a surprise that you would see a lot of them, you know, coming to the state's biggest city. But you know, from the numbers I've seen, there have been modest, you know, I think 200 to 300 Iraqis, I think, in the last over a decade, and zero from Syria, as far as I know. Most of the, a lot of the refugees that we've had are coming from African countries.
The Secretary of State still working on the first petition submitted. Still checking signatures from the first one, so a long way to go. Any news on that front, Jonathan Ellis?
There's a lot of signatures that do need to be checked, because there are so many ballot. I think there's a total of eight now that they are trying to refer. Yeah, and you know, I think Secretary of State Chantel Krebs is trying to do their due diligence. I mean, there have been issues with signatures before, most recently it was with nominating for candidates with a couple of Senate candidates, and so there are those issues that they, you know, in verifying those signatures. I think the sheer volume of them, and frankly, you have to, you know, these weren't all just initiated measures. I mean, some of them had, some of these were constitutional amendments, and that's double the number of signatures submitted. So stuff takes time. I think everybody's going to be anxious, though, to see kind of how the ballot's going to take shape. She's indicated that, you know, the first one submitted would be, that's how they would appear on the ballot in terms of order. So, you know, I mean, a lot of people think that, you know, these ballot issues are really probably going to be the biggest issues in the election coming up, because, you know, in terms of, we don't have necessarily as many candidates. You know, certainly we don't have a challenger to John Thune yet on the Democratic side. So a lot of people are thinking that these ballot issues are going to be sort of the marquee issues during the next election.
And the order on the ballot matters. Why?
Well, I think, you know, there's been some research done that maybe there's some fatigue on really long ballots, and so people maybe will read through a couple and vote one, and then pretty soon they either maybe just don't vote on other ones, or they just vote no. So having some position, I mean, you know, having a position, there's been some research showing that it helps, you know, potentially pass.
John Hunter, Chantel Krebs has said that they're only spending, you know, some free time on this. They're not devoting full time on checking these signatures. Is that the right way to go about it, or is that the only way they have?
I think it's the only way they have. Mm-hmm. They don't have additional staffing, so I don't think they can kind of create it out of thin air. They do. Secretary Krebs has indicated that they're caught up on the other things that the office was behind of when she took office last January. So she still expects to have them done by the end of January, which I think is plenty of time, all of them. So I have confidence that it will be adequate for next year's elections.
Okay. Black Hills State University planning to lead the restructuring of Gear Up. John Hunter, you know anything about that?
Yeah, I'm enthused about it. I think Black Hills State is going to be capable of it. You know, they have some other programs there that are working with Native Americans. They have a decent-sized population of their enrollment of Native Americans. So I think it'll be very highly scrutinized by both federal and state officials. I think it's the right place. It deserves the scrutiny because obviously it failed last time when the private contractor thinks so now, which is a little odd. I mean, there are times you think that privatizing is a good idea, and we've had a couple of situations where privatizing was not a good idea in South Dakota. And so, and I think in this case, that people would have more confidence in the government institution at Black Hills State. But I will say that I think that they have to be completely transparent about everything they do. Short of that, I think that the criticism of these programs will only grow. And there's no reason not to be completely transparent. And Jonathan, you might comment on that too. There, I can't imagine anything about this program that you wouldn't want to trumpet on the front page of the paper.
Well, I mean, if the program is working correctly, it is something that you would want to showcase, I would imagine. You know, and this was, you know, until this fire took place and these murders took place, I mean, who'd ever heard of the program, really, outside of probably the education community? You know, I agree that the transparency is going to be very critical in terms of the public trust issue. I think that, you know, in Black Hills is probably a good place to administer. I mean, certainly the School of Mines has been involved in the summer program for a long time, even before Gear Up was called Gear Up. So it is a good place. I think the concerns that I've heard from some people, however, are that they don't want to see the money just sort of, you know, disappear sort of in this hierarchy of administration. And the hunch is going to be that I suspect if we were to get a very full accounting of how the program had been run recently, we're going to see a lot of the money just sort of disappeared in administrative costs and didn't necessarily always go to the students. Mm-hmm. And so I think there are concerns among some, especially in the Native community, that, hey, why aren't we using, you know, let's do away with all of the so-called administrative costs that, you know, siphon away money and try to establish something that maybe a scholarship program or things like that. So those are some concerns that you do hear about.
And I think those are legitimate concerns. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of salaries and so forth for coordinators and those kind of things. So I agree. If they can show that it's getting results, you know, results would trump criticism of administrative costs, but even if they have average results, then I think those administrative costs could come under criticism.
Jonathan, I wanted to ask you about your article about the state bracing for a heroin epidemic.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. So this is happening. This is real. This is coming our way.
Well, I think the concern, I mean, it's hard to say, and I think that the state, I mean, the story is basically about South Dakota here, our medical board is going to be looking at rules that would allow first responders to carry medicines that sort of counter-react people who have heroin or any opioid overdoses. And the backdrop to all of this is that nationally there's just been this huge spike in heroin deaths. Heroin is really getting out of control in a lot of places. Now that hasn't really come to South Dakota yet. In terms of the state's health department, I think we've only seen 5 heroin overdoses that resulted in deaths in the last decade or so. However, if you look at other opioids, and we're talking about, you know, sort of popular prescription painkillers, you do see, I think there were close to 36 overdose deaths in 2013, I believe. And these medicines that first responders would carry would also help revive patients who had, you know, overdosed inadvertently on, you know, again, these hydrocodones or Percocets or these different types of painkillers that are opioids. Now, you know, the heroin epidemic, as experts will say, is being driven by the fact that these prescription painkillers, people are just becoming addicted to them. And when they're no longer able to get them through prescriptions from their doctor, whatever, then they're turning to heroin to satisfy the addictions they have for these opioids. So, you know, the Attorney General, who sponsored legislation to make it to allow first responders to carry these medicines that would counteract the overdoses, I mean, you know, his point is that lots of other states are doing the same thing. Some of them have actually had these in the hands of first responders for a very long time, but a lot of other states are moving in this direction just because of the huge spike nationally that they're seeing in heroin. And, you know, regionally, the Midwest, according to the Centers for Disease Control, regionally the Midwest is seeing the biggest increase in the country.
Where is the heroin coming from?
I'm told that it's coming from really all over the world, but primarily the distribution, I think, is probably coming from the Mexican cartels. Certainly in Afghanistan, heroin's been a problem. Mm-hmm. Production there. So, but I think primarily, you know, the Mexican cartels who long had established lines of drugs, whether it be for marijuana, cocaine. Those kinds of things, that they have sort of natural conduits then for getting heroin into the country.
The governor delivers the budget address next week. Anything in particular we need to be watching for, listening for, John Hunter?
Well, I think everyone's going to be waiting to see how the governor and the budget staff is responding to the Blue Ribbon Task Force on education funding. And so I think that's and I hope people think beyond the one number, and that the $75 million is the kind of the one number that people remember out of that long report and lots of recommendations. But that's what that's what budget addresses are for large numbers like that. So I think that's what everyone will be waiting for.
Jonathan Ellis?
I think that this will be the start. This budget address will be the start to what will be, I think, one of the most memorable and consequential legislative sessions that we've seen in a very long time. And that goes, you know, the Blue Ribbon panel is one thing. I mean, there's an issue with county government funding. There's a crisis among some counties there. And there's going to be the issue of Medicaid expansion. Mm-hmm. I mean, so this is the start of a very, I think, you know, could be a historic legislative session, really.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you both very much for coming on a day early. I appreciate it very much, and we'll talk with you again.
Thanks a lot.
Great, thanks.
Thank you. Jonathan Ellis, reporter, columnist with the Sioux Falls Argus Leader, and John Hunter, publisher of the Madison Daily Leader. And the reason they were on a day early is because tomorrow, over the noon hour, we're going to air a special NPR program hosted by Ari Shapiro. It's called Heating Up, and it examines the current science of climate change, how much time scientists say there is to address it, the political and economic challenges nationals will face during the meeting in Paris, and what solutions might come from the summit happening in Paris this week. That's tomorrow over the noon hour on Midday.